Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Radiolab is supported by Betterment. Let's talk about you and your money. You like to relax every now and then. Your money likes to work. And Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. While you're catching up on sleep, your money is up early, automatically reinvesting your dividends. Your money is a total workhorse, so you don't have to be, because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Wait, you're listening.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
You're listening to Radiolab.
Radiolab.
Shorts!
From
WNYC.
Yes. And NPR.
Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
This is Radiolab,
the podcast.
What are we going to do today, Robert?
I think we're going to get rid of something.
And here to tell us what and why is producer Andy Mills.
Okay, so a while back I was talking with author Sonia Shaw.
I've had a very fraught relationship with mosquitoes for a long time.
She actually wrote a book about malaria and mosquitoes
called The Fever.
And for her, it all really started when she was a kid.
Well, I grew up visiting India every summer. And
why were you going to India?
Because my family's from there. All my cousins, all my grandparents, they were all there.
Summer vacations.
Summer vacations in India with my cousins. All I wanted to do was fit in.
But the mosquitoes would always call her out.
They knew.
There was a Yankee in the group.
They would just focus on me. And so they wouldn't bite my cousins. They would be totally unscathed. And I would be like covered in welts. I ended up having to sleep under a mosquito net, which is even more kind of isolating, right? Like we used to sleep on little mats on the ground. You know, we would just roll out all these mats on the floor and everyone would sleep like in a big long row, except for me. I'd be like in a corner under this like suffocating net.
She says at night when mosquitoes would land on her net, she would think,
I hate you. I hate you. But at the same time, I'm not allowed to do anything to them.
And here's when you get to the fraught part, because Sonia and her family belong to this religion called Jain Dharma.
It's kind of an extreme nonviolent philosophy. You're not supposed to eat meat, obviously. You're not even supposed to eat any root vegetables because then you're killing the whole plant. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to walk on grass because if you walk on grass, you can kill little insects. When you pray, you're supposed to wear a mask so you don't breathe in any like microbes or insects and inadvertently kill them. So I have to act like I'm totally cool with the mosquitoes around me.
But every so often, Sonia says,
I would see a mosquito land near me. And when I thought no one was looking, I would just sort of mush it with my hand. And I still can feel like that tingly feeling on my hand just telling you that story. That tiny body being crushed by my hand, I mean, it makes me feel terrible.
And Sonia's ambivalence toward the mosquito, it has stayed with her entire life pretty much, because on the one hand, she knows that mosquitoes have gotten a bad rap.
First of all,
they don't really want to suck your blood.
They don't want to risk their lives to get a blood meal. It's the most dangerous thing they're ever going to do because it's so easy for us to kill them. On top of that, when they fill up with your blood, that blood is several times heavier than their own body weight. So suddenly, they're full of this stuff and they can't fly very well anymore.
And on top of that, the only mosquitoes that bite you are the ladies.
And the only reason they do it is because of all the protein in blood, and they use that to nourish their eggs.
If they didn't have the protein in that blood, nearly all their babies would die.
So they're really only doing, they're not even doing it for food, you know.
So every bite is just good mommying, really.
You could say that.
We have to just put out the message that when you're being swarmed by mosquitoes biting you, that you're just being swarmed by good ladies who are just nurturing. That might just change the attitude.
I do not fail to appreciate the charm of the mommy mosquito.
Good.
But on the other hand, think of all the misery they have caused human beings.
Oh, yeah.
Like with malaria, which mosquitoes spread.
There's good estimates that get bandied around by, you know, esteemed experts that 1/2 of all human deaths since the Stone Age have been due to malaria.
Whoa.
1/2?
1/2 of all human deaths since the Stone Age.
More people than cancer, more people than heart disease.
So it's had a huge, huge impact on our species. We know this.
And for me, this is not just some like faraway, sad statistical abstraction, right? Like, you know, I used to live and work in Sudan. And while I was there, I saw the children's wards at the clinics and the hospitals. Like, I saw the kids dying of this disease, all from a mosquito. And kind of where I'm headed with this is that, like, in a world where we are losing animals all the time and we are sad about that, like, maybe there's this one, the mosquito, that we can actually annihilate. I mean, could this be the creature that we can all agree that we should just get rid of?
You can hope for that, Andy, but it's not going to happen because mosquitoes are incredibly fertile. You could make a little groove on a rainy day in the mud, and they will have babies in that little patch of water.
It's like a baby party.
They're like a baby
in a footstep.
Party. Exactly. So there is no
way
you
can't wipe
you're
that
going
out.
To be able
Well, remember, mosquitoes, you know, they reproduce really fast. A typical mosquito only lives for like a week or so. So many, many, many generations are evolving as we're throwing chemicals at them. And as soon as one evolves some way to withstand it a little bit better, that little creature sort of sweeps its genes throughout the population. And that happens within like a few years. Like, so 3, 5, 7 years is kind of the time horizon for when you start using a chemical against a mosquito to when the mosquito population becomes resistant to it.
Wow. Well, that's a problem.
It's a problem.
But, what if I told you that we had gotten to the point where we could solve this problem?
Oh, you'll have to show me an example.
Oh, that would make me so happy to show you.
Wow.
I sent reporter David Baker down to this small town in eastern Brazil to check out this factory.
And here is mosquito factory. And just as we come in, a woman with a kind of electric tennis racket is killing an insect on the wall.
A mosquito factory?
Yeah, it sounds strange, but the world's largest mosquito factory is in Brazil.
This is Hayden Perry,
Chief Executive Officer of Oxitec.
And by factory, he means that this is a place where people actually breed mosquitoes. A very special kind.
I think at the moment they're making about 4 million or so a week.
Bom dia.
After you pass through a couple of airlocks, you enter this massive room.
It's a huge concrete warehouse.
Where there are rows and rows of buckets. How this works is that Hayden and his company in England, they will send the factory workers here a batch of eggs.
And then we remove the eggs and put it all in a water. I am Aldo Malavasi, director of the Medfly Mosquito Facility in Brazil.
And inside
each of these buckets,
what's that, a gram?
How many? Quanto contém aqui?
Inside is 80,000 eggs, and they look like they're just tiny, tiny little black dots.
Para chegar na fase de pupa, 8 dias.
8 dias. After you put the eggs, in about 30 minutes to 1 hour, they start to hatch. And then we have a small larvae.
And now you can see lots of, this is larva. These are larva, lots of mosquito larva swimming in the water. Whoa.
They look like long, translucent worms with spikes all over their bodies.
If someone said put your hand in there, I'm not sure if I would.
He's beautiful.
Now, according to Hayden, when these mosquitoes grow up and become adults, they will look
completely indistinguishable from normal mosquitoes, except that they carry this lethal gene.
Hayden's company has actually put a tiny little extra special, extra deadly gene inside their bodies. Which,
so here,
you can actually see. At a certain point in David's trip, one of the factory workers, they brought over this special UV light and they shined it over the larva.
Oh, goodness me. It's like something from Alien. It's like wiggling larva
that is full of these kind of globules that are glowing red, like from inside its body. Those are the genes that are glowing?
Yes.
Wow.
Hayden and his company, they have genetically engineered this glowing red gene so that when it turns on,
it actually produces a certain protein.
Inside of these mosquitoes, the gene starts cranking out these proteins more and more and more and more until the cell basically goes
out of control. And the insect dies.
So does that mean these mosquitoes are going to die?
No. This is the evil genius part. They turn off this gene temporarily. Then in another room in the factory,
okay,
they hatch the babies, grow the mosquitoes in these test tubes.
Thousands, perhaps, of these plastic tubes. Inside are mosquitoes, loads of them.
Then they separate
pup females and males.
Females and males, okay.
Then they take just the males.
Put the males into little pots.
They take the pots out into cities and towns, and every few hundred feet,
they shake these pots out
and release the mosquitoes into the wild.
Those males, they go out there, they are just tuned in to finding females.
Remember, those are the ones that bite.
They tune into the wing beat, and off they go, find a female. They're satisfying the biological urge to mate.
Then the female will go off and lay her eggs. The eggs will hatch. And then inside each and every one of those little babies, the gene will turn on. They'll start pumping out those proteins. The cell goes out of control.
And larvae will die before they become functioning adults. So instead of that female laying 100 eggs at a time or up to 500 in their lifetime, she lays the same number, but they die.
And they're actually doing this? I mean, they've released these mutants into the wild?
Yes.
To give an example of the last trial, they were working in a town called Mandacaru, about 3,000 people there.
Mandacaru is this small town in Brazil that's had a really terrible time with the disease that the mosquitoes spread there called dengue fever, which can make you
feel as if your bones are breaking.
And it can sometimes cause
bleeding from the eyes or ears.
And in kids, death. Now, they've tried bed nets, they've tried chemicals.
They try everything.
Nothing's worked because in the past decade, what you've seen is cases of dengue going up and up and up.
Yeah.
But in 2011,
they started releasing our males.
All across town, they released these mutant males. And then they waited.
And within about 6 months, they reduced the population of the mosquitoes by 96%.
Wow! 96%?
Yeah, in that town. So in 6 months, you pretty much eliminated the mosquito population.
And this wasn't just some one-off thing, because the next year, after the rainy season,
instead of seeing that massive explosion of mosquito numbers, which you get every single year, you didn't see any increase at all.
Wow.
Because there wasn't a population there to build up.
And this is just the beginning.
In Brazil, there's been a series of trials.
In a bunch of different places.
They're all over 90%.
As in 90% of the population was killed in the first round. And they've released them in different parts of the Cayman Islands.
And again, that was the same idea. We had over 90% reduction.
They're starting their first trials in Panama. They're in talks with local government officials in India, Malaysia, and the USA.
Yeah.
Can we just think about what would the world look like without mosquitoes?
I mean, California. There's hardly any mosquitoes there. It would be like California everywhere. Huh. That would be totally awesome.
Oh, that's going to be my camp slogan. Kill them all. It'll be like California everywhere. Sonia Shaw.
I just want to point out, both of you are acting like the only thing that happens with these animals is they make humans, and particularly human children, sick.
It's not them, it's the parasite.
Right.
But they're the ones who are spreading it. And so if our idea is you stop the mosquito, you stop the malaria, then I've been really...
a few other things, that's all I'm saying. Call David, please, because he... You know David? Just call David.
So, we did. That's a really good mosquito impression, actually.
Is that David?
That's David.
Oh, we called David.
I'm David Quammen. I'm a science writer based in Bozeman, Montana.
He's actually been on the show a bunch.
What I slapped was not a mosquito.
But the reason that Robert wanted us to call him this time is because a long, long time ago...
Many, many, many years ago...
David wrote an article for Outside Magazine...
titled Sympathy for the Devil...
that wrestled with the following question.
What, if anything, are the redeeming merits of the mosquito? All the harm that they do, all the disease that they cause, these critters have a lot to answer for. But is that the whole story? Should we therefore dismiss them?
Or destroy them.
Or destroy them, eradicate them.
Did you come up with things to say about this?
Well, wasn't easy, but I did. Yeah, I read, and...
And while he read, he said he did turn up some interesting facts. For example, there is this mosquito that lives up in the Arctic.
Aedes nigripes.
Which,
pollinates Arctic orchids and spreads no disease to anybody.
Which is nice, but then... David made the following argument.
Because of their pestiferous disease vectoring.
Pestiferous disease vectoring. Whoa.
They have made tropical forest very, very difficult for humans to inhabit, to colonize over the last 10,000 years.
Because every time that we would try and go into those forests, we would get sworn by mosquitoes, and we'd run away.
And therefore, they have played an important role in bringing those forests forward relatively intact into the 20th and 21st centuries. The Amazon forest, the Congo forest, the forests of Borneo, the forests of Southeast Asia. If there were no difficulties, diseases, threats to the people living in those forests, then those forests would have been turned into settlements, cities, farmlands, much more extensively and much earlier than they have been and are now being. I call them nature's Viet Cong because they are the resistance fighters on behalf of the rainforest.
Why don't we make it harder for you? Why don't we make you imagine that it's springtime or early summer in Alaska, that there's tundra melting everywhere, that there are hordes and hordes and clouds of mosquitoes, and they're forming a permanent sort of cloud around you. And then Andy Mills comes up and offers you the opportunity to eliminate them completely from the planet. And he makes this offer as they are stabbing you in the wrist, face, cheek, and ear. Would do what, say?
I would do these two things. First, I would unzip the mosquito net of the tent, and I would say, Andy, for God's sake, let's have this conversation in the tent. And we would jump in the tent, zip that thing, and then maybe spend about 10 minutes killing every mosquito that got into the tent with us. I admit that.
Okay, that's
now
true.
I'd say, okay, now, Andy, we can think about this clearly. And one of the things I'd say was, well, look, if we're up here, just two humans in the middle of this Alaskan tundra, and there are these millions and millions of mosquitoes swarming around us to get our blood, obviously we're a small factor on this landscape, and they're a big factor in some way. So if we were to press a button and eradicate them instantly, it's very difficult to know their load-bearing significance in the ecosystem because they're playing lots of different roles as parasites, as competitors, as prey.
But one of the things that Sonia Shaw told me is that they actually don't play a big role in the ecosystem.
I mean, I really tried hard when I was writing this book to get a mosquito biologist to explain to me that mosquitoes were useful in their habitats, you know, that they had some sort of ecological role to play that was important. And no one would admit that they had any role at all. They say they're not a useful nutrition for bats or fish or any of the other like predators of mosquitoes because their biomass is so small that, you know, those creatures would be fine without mosquitoes. Like everyone would be fine without mosquitoes.
She might be right about that, but that's not the only ecological dimension we're talking about. That does
not
prove.
What other dimension might there be as a for example?
Competition. They might be competing with other insects, and if you eliminate the mosquitoes, then suddenly filaria flies become much more abundant.
Oh.
I mean, when you talk about trying to foresee the consequences of completely eradicating any one species, we just don't know.
The real deep thought here is, if you're going to destroy, the only obligation you owe to yourself is to know what you're killing.
Absolutely. And by that I mean, yes, to know absolutely
yeah.
the dimensions, the implications of what you're doing.
And what I'm weighing on here, Kwaman, is that I too have been to some of these sub-Saharan parts of Africa, and I just was floored that we have a curable disease, and how many, like, 12, 13, 14-year-old kids were hauled up in this ward, you know? Like,
I agree with you that that's urgently compelling and important, and I feel the same way, that something needs to be done, and it's true to some extent.
In the end, after all the debate, I've ended up at this kind of middle ground.
Well, I think what we'll aim to do, actually...
Hayden Perry put it to me like this. We don't have to kill them all everywhere. In fact, maybe we shouldn't. But we can kill them where we live.
Eliminate them in our major urban cities and towns, that they no longer pose a threat.
We can draw a line and say, you know what, you stay out in the woods, we'll stay here, because the diseases that they're spreading, they will go away if the mosquito goes away for long enough. Because if we get better, like in America, we don't get malaria, hardly ever, because there's no one with malaria that a mosquito would bite and then give that malaria to someone else.
Oh.
We have a ton of Anopheles mosquitoes, and we have less than 1,000 cases of malaria a year. Almost all those cases are somebody like myself who gets sick in Africa, comes back here.
Uh-huh.
And why is that? Because we hit zero. Well, I mean, close to zero in our cities and towns. Once people stopped having malaria here, mosquitoes stopped getting it and giving it to other people.
Oh,
you just got to hit zero for a while.
You know, we just have to kind of police the boundary a little bit better. The mosquitoes can still do their thing.
Hmm.
We can do our thing.
So you don't hate them anymore is what you're saying.
I think there's a way to live harmoniously with the mosquitoes. I mean, we do it in this country, right? I mean, we have mosquitoes and we control their populations in many ways, but we also get bit.
Special thanks to Andy Mills, of course, who learned bug tolerance through Radiolab.
Also, a very special thanks to David Baker, who went above and beyond in the pursuit of mutant mosquitoes. And thanks also, big thanks to writer Sonia Shaw, and to you guys for listening. I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
See you next time.
This is Eric.
And Rebecca.
And we're calling from St. Croix.
In the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Where we just sailed down from Savannah, Georgia.
In an 88-year-old Grand Banks Gloucester fishing schooner.
Radiolab is supported in part by
the National Science Foundation.
And by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation.
Enhancing public understanding of science and technology in the modern world.
More information about Sloan at
www.sloan.org.